Emotion gets the best of us sometimes, and this even comes into play as we plan our finances. I don't know much about behavioral finance, but I do know someone who does, and that's Edgar Norton, professor of finance at Illinois State University. Edgar, thanks for agreeing to school me on this topic today.
My pleasure, Willis.
So what is behavioral finance? What are we talking about?
Well, it's that field of finance that tries to take into account human behavior when people make financial decisions.
So what are the differences between behavioral finance and traditional finance?
Well, traditional finance is more mathematically oriented, and also we take emotions out of the picture. We believe we're all rational economic decision makers, and we're always going to make, you know, weigh the pros and cons and make the best decision at the right time and take the lowest price, highest quality items, so to speak, and we apply all that to picking what stocks and bonds and mutual funds we're going to buy. And therefore, the bottom line is today's stock prices reflect what the value of that company really is. Whereas behavioral finance says that, well, we all have our foibles, and sometimes that interferes with common sense thinking, and we may make some foolish decisions. And insofar that sometimes applying to the stock market, stock prices might get way out of whack with what the true values are of the underlying companies.
People invest the money tend to keep close eye on the stock market. So what do the trends of the stock market tell you as you try and figure out what's going to happen next?
Well, it's pretty tough to figure out what happens next. The long-term trend of the market has been up over many, many years because of economic growth. We have a growing economy in the U.S. Now, the difficulty gets into if you're going to try to predict what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or even next month. People have a tendency to try to see patterns whether or not they really exist. For example, if someone wants to do a coin toss, mm-hmm. and you get five heads in a row. I know you got your lucky nickel over there.
Last semester it was a dime, but budget cutbacks forced me to choose a nickel this time.
So suppose you flip your lucky nickel there and you got five heads in a row. And now you talk to your buddies and say, hey, what do you think what do you think number six is going to be, a heads or a tail?
Let me find out. I'm going to say it's going to be a heads again. Okay, I'm going to say we're going to six heads in a row. Let's see what happens. And it's heads.
It's heads.
It's heads.
Well, what stocks are you buying right now, Will?
They're only worth a nickel, I'll tell you that much, because that's all I can afford. So what does that tell us?
Not much. Because as long as it's a fair coin, and I know your coin is a fair coin, every coin toss, it's going to be a 50-50 chance of coming up heads or tails.
So it doesn't matter.
The fact that you have five or ten or one head has no impact on the next coin toss. And so some people argue that's how the day-to-day movements are, or hour-by-hour movements are in the stock market. It's relatively random. But if I see a pattern showing, okay, the market's been up for the past 5 days, what does that say for the next day? And the bottom line is absolutely nothing. It'll be tomorrow's news that will affect tomorrow's market, not the fact that it's going to continue a trend or go against that longer-term trend.
But the difference seems to me is if when I flip this coin, there are only two possible outcomes. When it comes down, it can only land on its head or on its tail. It can't land on its side or angled or anything like that. But that's not really true when you're dealing with stock performances, because you can evaluate certain, there are always different factors involved. Maybe there was a management change at a company. There's always different factors involved. So it's really not just a 50-50 chance when you're talking about stock selections, right?
I would agree with that, as long as the company has good products and management is somewhat competent. And again, the overall economy is performing as it should. There is this longer-term trend that helps to create a rising stock market over time. But I can't predict what's going to happen for the rest of this calendar year, nor can I for the next calendar year. And I can't really predict what's going to happen next month or next week. And that's where some of the people that like to play the market, the day traders is one extreme, trying to take advantage of what they think are day-to-day movements and getting winners, and or sometimes we just buy and sell too much with our stocks, and that's where we get into trouble, when we think we can outsmart the market, when maybe day-to-day it's a little bit more random than we thought. Given your example, you know, a company has a new manager, maybe they are number one smart and they're going to take the company forward. Well, that might give me some hint for what might happen for the next two to three years, but what's going to happen tomorrow, I'm clueless.
When someone is thinking about behavioral finance, Should they leave that off the table when they're dealing with how they make their financial decisions, or should they have it in the back of their mind, or where is that flow in the whole process of financial selections?
Well, I think the benefit of behavioral finance is it does help to point out our faults and our human foibles, and if we can be aware of those situations that lead to error, maybe we can not lose so much money, and we can buy and hold more, perhaps, and we can make some smarter decisions by avoiding some obvious errors.
Behavioral finance is an emerging field of study and another reason to broaden what you think you know about finances and the marketplace. Edgar Norton, thanks as always.
You're welcome, Willis.
I'm Willis Kern.